Hey, let's go ahead and get started. I've got a handout here for you. Most of you picked it up if you didn't trip over it. And this is going to be a homework assignment that is going to be due on Thursday. And I'll tell you a little bit more about it in just a minute. But as far as what we're doing this week, I'm going to take a few minutes this morning and finish up talking about some of these morphological features in soils. And in lab on Thursday, you'll have a chance to see some of these things. I didn't quite get finished with them last week. So we'll finish that up, and then we're going to move on to horizons and talking about soil horizons, the master horizons, and subordinate distinctions. And that's kind of related to your assignment for Thursday. So any questions about that? Well, just to refresh your memory, when we stopped last time, we had gotten to the point we were looking at some of these miscellaneous features. And I'll just start here. This one is what we call the clay film, or the fancy name is argillan. And I mentioned that this is something that can be very diagnostic for classification purposes in soils. And this is nothing more than an accumulation of clay as it moves from upper horizon. It gets physically carried by water moving down through the soil and deposited somewhere in the subsoil. And a lot of times, if you look with a hand lens, you'll see this kind of a waxy coating that is actually on the surface of the aggregates or the peds. And this is something I'll show you in lab on Thursday, and hopefully you'll get a chance to see it and be able to recognize it in the future. And I mentioned hand lenses the other day. If you've got one, you might want to bring it along to lab. I think you'll find it might be useful, and certainly on field trips when we go out, you should bring one along. If you don't have one, you might think about getting one. They're not that expensive, and it really does open up a whole new world. Being able to see things at about a 10x magnification makes a big difference. So another one of these miscellaneous features that you might run into, slick insides, kind of a good word if you play Scrabble. And we mentioned these are something you find in soils that have a high shrink swell potential. And it's just this grooved, shiny surface as the adjacent peds, which in the case of many of these soils are wedge-shaped rather than block-like, but they slide back and forth over one another. And it's what creates the surface. I'll have some examples of that for you in lab. This next one, I showed you the cracks at the surface. Again, it's indicative of a soil that has a shrink swell potential. And obviously this would be the dry time of the year because that's when the soil starts to shrink or occupies less volume. And some of these cracks are quite deep. And then I believe this is the one we stopped on. This is a close-up of some soil. That knife there you can see for scale. And you'll notice the white material. There are a lot of things that you'll see in soils that fall under the general heading of accumulations or concentrations. Probably one of the most common ones you're ever going to run into is calcium carbonate. And in this case, you can see that these concentrations would be described as filaments or masses. You can see the filaments here, these stringy looking things versus the big areas or masses of it. And the way that you would test this out to make sure it's calcium carbonate is to use, hydrochloric acid. And we'll let you do that in lab on Thursday. So this is one of the common ways that you'll see calcium carbonate that is actually moved in the soil. It's gone from an upper horizon into a lower horizon. And this is sometimes referred to as secondary calcium carbonate deposits. The other possibility is this next image where the calcium carbonate has moved and accumulated in the subsoil, and you can see down here, but it's not just showing up in these distinct filaments or masses. It's really disseminated throughout the entire soil matrix. And in this case, it turns out there's so much of it, this is actually cemented to some extent. So this might be the other extreme where you'll see a lot of calcium carbonate accumulation. It makes for a light colored horizon. and it's just completely throughout the soil matrix, and in this case it's even plugged it. The next image here, this is some iron manganese nodules. It's another type of concentration. These things are generally spherical shaped. They tend to be rich in iron and manganese, and so they're iron and manganese oxides technically. And a lot of times these things have a concentric fabric. In other words, it starts out from a point and it just keeps growing, and the surface of it tends to attract more iron and manganese. And so you some of these things get fairly large, but typically they might be sand-sized or gravel-sized, and they are often associated with soils that have some sort of a change in the oxidizing and reducing conditions over the course of the year. So maybe a fluctuating water table or something along those lines. Not necessarily that common, but you can find them in some of our Palouse soils, and they tend to not be quite this red, but a darker, almost black color sometimes, which generally indicates they've got a lot more manganese. So show you some examples of this in lab on Thursday as well. And last but not least, here's another good Scrabble word, a crotovina. This comes from the Russian language, and that's why the weird spelling on it. But a crotovina is nothing more than a backfilled burrow that you find in the soil. And this soil profile that you see on the left, you've got some horizons here, but you notice how down in here you've got this kind of material, which looks like it's the weathered bedrock, and then you've got this kind of material, which it's all jumbled up. And whenever you see something like this, it's a pretty good indicator that you've had some kind of a burrowing animal in there. Around here, it might be a badger, ground squirrels, gophers, a lot of possibilities, but they do a tremendous amount of mixing or disturbance of the horizons, and it's not uncommon to get to a situation like this where you've got bits and pieces of horizons that are sort of all mixed up. Earthworms also create these in soils as well. So a lot of different possibilities, but we refer to all of them as crotovinas. Yeah, question?
Does it have to be a certain
size? It does. I've seen them that are tiny. A lot of the earthworm burrows that have been filled in are no bigger than your little finger. And then you've got the other extreme where you get into badgers and some of the larger burrowing mammals, and the crotovinas are quite large. So there's really no size requirement on it. Yeah?
So when you'd annotate something like that, would it be something like crotovino in one area or another? Or?
Yeah, there's different ways to handle it. And if you're looking at a soil like this one here, you might describe the just a very large crotovina. You might say something about the size, and if you're good at wildlife, you might even know the likely culprit that's caused it. But there's not really a set way to describe it, at least for ones that are this large. Smaller ones, there's some other possibilities. I think we might even get to that. So there are other things as well that would be among these miscellaneous features. And I do have a few examples that I'll show you in class, in lab, on Thursday afternoon. But you're not going to find them in all soils, but you do run across them. And I guess the idea here is all of these features, they tell us something. And so when you see them, you should do your best to try and make note of them and describe them. Because if you don't, you're probably leaving out some worthwhile information. So the goal is really to be as complete as you can be. Okay, anything else about these morphological features? We talked about color, texture, rock fragments, the concentrations of different kinds, the rupture resistance, and a lot of these things that you looked at in lab last week. So this, we'll put all this together in what I call a description form, where if you were to go look at a soil, there would be a place where you would note things like the color, the rupture resistance, the plasticity, the consistence, whether or not they're rock fragments, and all of these types of features. So we'll get it organized. Well, what I want to do next is move on to soil horizons, okay? And I think for most of you, This is going to be a little bit of a review, I hope so. Because I think you probably had this in Soil 205 or Soil 206, whatever the case may be. And I think if you remember the nomenclature, we really split it up into two different things relative to horizons. First of all, we have what are known as master horizons and master horizon symbols. Does anybody remember what those are? It's an example of a master horizon symbol. No, that's a series name. Yeah, an O horizon, A horizon, B horizon. And then the second part of that is the subordinate distinctions. What was that? Oh. But somebody's making my attention. So anybody remember subordinate distinction? Don't see these quite as commonly, but we'll be using them a lot. Well, the subordinate distinction would be a lowercase symbol. And the master horizons are all uppercase, you know, like A horizon. And then you might see a lowercase letter that it goes with that master horizon symbol. And this would be what we refer to as the subordinate distinction. So we'll talk about each of these, and I think we'll get through the master horizon symbols today, and then this homework assignment that I gave you is to go into either the textbook or whatever source you may want and find out what all these subordinate distinction symbols are. There are 33 of them, so some of them we're not going to worry too much about, but you do want to look them up and at least have some idea of what they refer to. So let's start with the master horizons. And I think that, as I said, most of you will find this review. The master horizon symbol, O, stands for what? Yeah, this is an organic horizon. And when we say it's an organic horizon, we actually mean something very specific in that to qualify as an organic horizon rather than a mineral soil horizon, there is a minimum amount of organic matter that needs to be present. Does anybody remember what it is? How much?
Is it around 5%? More
than that. It turns out that there has to be a minimum of 20 to 30% organic matter, and that's on a weight basis. And how much does organic matter weigh relative to mineral material, like sand grains and so on? It's not very much, and it's very light. And because of that, a minimum of 20% organic matter by weight is a lot, okay? Sometimes you'll see this written as 12 to 18% organic carbon. And for all intents and purposes, these are equivalent. 12% organic carbon translates into 20% organic matter. And same 18% organic carbon translates into 30% organic matter. So it's a little bit confusing, but they do represent the same thing. And the reason it's a sliding scale like this is depending on how much mineral material might be there. In other words, if you don't have any clay size material, you only need 20% organic matter. If you get a sizable amount of clay, like upwards of 40, 50, 60%, then you need to be on the upper end of that. So 60% clay, then you need 30% organic matter by weight to qualify it. But usually these are pretty obvious. Now, if I offered up an award, maybe $100 for the first person that could bring back a sample of an organic horizon, where would you go around here? If you want to do this quickly, I'd be the first one back with the O horizon. Where do you go?
Forest.
Okay, probably up on Moscow Mountain or wherever you find a forest. I think you could actually go up to the U of I Arboretum, and you would find a forest litter layer up there, and that qualifies as an O horizon. That's probably what we think of as the most common example around here. Where else might you find O horizons besides the litter layer in a forest?
Along the creek?
Some creeks. Generally, if you think about wetlands, they very commonly are made up of organic soils. And you've all heard the term something like a peatland. Well, peat is organic material, and it would represent a type of O horizon. So these would be the most common examples of where you would see an O horizon, forest litter layer, or in a lot of your wetlands. So these would all be designated as O horizons. Okay, how about this one, A horizon? How would we define that? What's the main characteristic? That's kind of the idea of these master horizons, is they indicate sort of an overriding feature or characteristic. What would it be for an A horizon? Okay, that's first thing, it's a mineral horizon. And that's an important distinction. So right away, we know that it's less than 20 to 30% organic matter by weight. So it's a mineral horizon, and what's the thing that sets it apart from other mineral horizons?
It's where the minerals accumulate.
Not so much minerals accumulating, but there's another feature that makes it distinctive. What does an A horizon look like?
Topsoil.
Okay, topsoil, and just in terms of appearance, how would you recognize it? It's dark, and why is it dark?
More soil organic.
Okay, it's where we, a mineral horizon in which organic matter has accumulated. Now, you gotta be careful here, because we're saying that it's characterized by the accumulation of organic matter, but it is not an organic horizon. It's not an O horizon, it's an A horizon. And if you went out around here and looked at a soil that was maybe under native Palouse prairie, you would have a very dark surface horizon. In fact, you might even describe it as almost black in terms of the color. And it would probably have about 5 or 6% organic matter by weight. So it would be considerably less than what we're talking about here for the organic horizons. So the A horizons typically are going to be the darkest soil horizon that you will find in a soil profile. And when we say dark, what do we mean in terms of Munsell notation? Think back to the lab. If a soil is dark, what can you say about the Munsell color notation? Yeah? Yeah, it would have a low color value. Remember, the value is the amount of lightness or darkness or relative lightness, and those at the bottom of the page are the dark ones, and those are the low color values. So low color value. If I offered a reward for the first person to bring back an A horizon, where would you go?
Correct.
Yeah, I think you just make a mad dash outside the building. First place you see grass, dig it up, bring it in here, and you'd have an A horizon. Okay, the next one, kind of work our way down. Capital E. Anybody remember what this stands for or represents? Okay, the leaching, here's the technical word, eluvial horizon. Notice the spelling, E-L-U-V-I-A-L, eluvial. And I'm going to put in parentheses, mineral. This is also a mineral horizon as opposed to organic. And what do we mean when we say it's an eluvial horizon? What's happened?
Water's receded from
It could be, but what would characterize an eluvial horizon relative to other ones in soil profile? What's that?
It's very light colored.
Okay, it's very light colored. And why is it light colored? Okay, it's been leached, and if you think about what constitute the main pigmenting agents in soils. Now, think back to lab on Thursday. You saw some red soils. What makes the red color? Iron oxides. Okay, you saw some very dark soils. What makes the dark color? Organic matter. Those would be two things that really impart a great deal of the colors that we see in soils. And the fact that you don't have them results in very light-colored material. So this eluvial horizon is characterized by the loss or removal of iron oxides, organic matter, and I would even put clays on here. Remember, clays are the finest particles, less than 0.002 millimeters. And because they're so small, they tend to be carried by water as it moves down through the soil. And eventually, they move out of an E-horizon and accumulate below. That picture I showed you a few minutes ago of an argillan or a clay film, what color was it? Brown. It kind of looked like caramel or that sort of a coloration. And that's typically what a lot of these clays look like because they've got some organic matter associated with them. But the fact that you remove these, again, leads to this business of a light-colored horizon there. Okay, so there's three of them. Let's...
What if you don't have an E-horizon?
What's that?
What if you don't have an E-horizon?
Well, okay, that's a good point, and I should make that right now, is that we're going to go through these master horizon symbols, and not every soil profile is going to have all of them. But where would you go around here to find an E-horizon? Anybody got an idea on that?
Calcium carbonate rich soils? Or?
Well, they'd be light colored, but that wouldn't constitute an E-horizon because if calcium carbonate is accumulated, it really doesn't fit this business of an eluvial type of horizon.
The buttes, then?
The what?
The buttes.
You might find one, probably the best, yeah.
I was going to say, isn't there some like a subdivision by the creek go there?
You do find some around here. Typically though, the most common place to find E-horizons is when you get into areas of higher precipitation, and here that would certainly be forests. You'd have a hard time finding them a good E-horizon in a forest soil around here. You have to get up a little further north in Idaho, but that's generally where you think about them, is where you get a lot of precipitation, so you have a lot of water moving down through the soil horizon, and as it moves through, it carries the clays, the iron oxides, those types of things, and leading to the formation of this eluvial horizon. We do have them in some of the grassland soils around here, but they tend to be pretty far down in the soil profile, and it's a little more complicated story, but we'll talk about that later in the semester. So let's move on down. What's a B horizon? Yeah?
In the wetlands?
Uh-huh.
Find a E horizon?
Typically, no. What you'll often find in the wetlands is either on one of these organic soils or organic horizons or a series of organic horizons, or if it is a mineral soil, it tends to be one of these that has remember we talked about the dull gray colors that you get in a reducing type environment? That would be more of a characteristic as opposed to an E horizon. Because it's not just being wet, but it's having the water and different types of organic acids actually percolating down through it. Yeah? A perched water table, a seasonal perched water table, will also give rise to an E horizon. That's the ones that we see around here locally. Okay, what about a B horizon? What's one thing you can say about it? Organic or mineral? Okay, it's a mineral horizon. And what would the characteristic or characteristics be? What's the general process or feature of these bee horizons? It could, relative to the rest of the soil. It might have a lot of iron oxides, a lot of possibilities, calcium carbonate. I guess the word I would associate with bee horizons is accumulation, okay? And if you look at a little bit fancier definition, a bee horizon is a mineral horizon that is characterized by showing significant alteration from the original parent material. And in this case, the significant alteration is commonly an accumulation of a material. And what might accumulate in a bee horizon commonly is clays, iron oxides, and in fact, I'll even put iron / aluminum oxides, because you can find both. Sometimes we even find humus that accumulates in a bee horizon. And oftentimes, the accumulation of these things is what we call or refer to as an illuvial accumulation. Note the spelling, it's a little bit different than eluvial. And in terms of meaning, it's the opposite. When we talk about an illuvial accumulation, that refers to this downward translocation. So in the case of clays, iron oxides, humus, it's being moved from an upper horizon down into this B horizon. And that's how it's accumulating. There are other possibilities. Sometimes the clays and the iron oxides just accumulate as a result of weathering and natural processes like that. Yeah. You should always put a subordinate distinction with the bee horizon. Always. And if you see just a plain bee horizon with no subordinate distinction, somebody's not doing their job. So this bee horizon, significant alteration of parent material. Typically, it's through accumulation of these things. Other possibilities for accumulation, we've got calcium carbonate, soluble salts. We could make a pretty long list here of things that might accumulate in a bee horizon. But they all represent a significant alteration from the parent material. And two other things that we might associate with bee horizons are, first of all, high chroma. Remember chroma from the Munsell notation? We said this is the strength or purity of a color. Typically, the bee horizon has the highest chroma of any of the soil horizons, and that's because it's reflecting some weathering or this idea of significant alteration. And the other thing that we see in a bee horizon is soil structure. And that also represents significant alteration of parent material. Parent material, geologic material, does not have soil structure. It's only when you get that material in a near surface environment and it's subject to water moving through it, root activity, microbial activity, freeze thaw, shrink swell, that's when you develop soil structure. And that's considered part of this idea of significant alteration. So bee horizons constitute a lot of different things and a lot of different specific properties, but I would think of it in terms of generally something has accumulated there. And that's probably the central concept of it, along with the idea that it's significantly altered from the original material. Okay, now we get down into the next horizon to consider, and this one is designated as a C horizon. The soil scientists did not show a lot of imagination when they came up with these designations. Obviously, A, B, C, and could have done a little bit more with that. But What's a sea horizon?
Parent material.
Okay, a sea horizon is parent material or parent material that shows only slight alteration. In other words, it has not been significantly altered. So we can say it's like parent material and another way of saying that, no significant alteration. You might see a little bit of something accumulating there, but it's not what you'd consider significant alteration, very much like the parent material. So it has not been affected by the soil forming processes at the other horizons. Okay, does anybody know of any other master horizon similar? Well, wait a second, before we move on, one more thing about a sea horizon. Would you expect to find nice blocky structure in a sea horizon? No, because that, as we said, would represent significant alteration. So typically, sea horizons, you do not see soil structure there. And in most cases, you're not going to see an enrichment or accumulation of anything. So not so much to describe as with B horizons. And I guess the other way of putting this is that sea horizons lack the properties of A, E, B horizons. Does anybody know another master horizon?
R?
Yeah, capital R. Good. What does that stand for? Yeah, this stands for hard bedrock. Now, it's important to note here that this term bedrock, and when we talk about bedrock, we're talking about a continuous, more or less laterally continuous geological formation that's hard, as opposed to rock fragments. Rock fragments are not the same as bedrock. And I'll show you an example of this. But hard bedrock, the practical definition is that it is hard enough you can't dig it with a shovel. You could probably take a shovel and chip away at it, but you can't dig it. And I guess you might argue, is this really a soiled horizon? Well, sometimes it is, because the upper part of the bedrock might have a few cracks in it where something's filtered down, some finer material, and you might see some evidence of soil. But in general, I think of this mostly as geologic material, hard bedrock. Around here, common examples would be basalt or granite. If you get up on Moscow Mountain, would be the common bedrock types. Well, these are the important ones, the six that we mentioned, O, A, E, B, C, and R. They're the ones that you're most commonly going to see. There are actually three others that I'm going to put them up here. And I'll tell you what they are, but I don't want to spend a lot of time on them because these are not horizon designations that are that common. And they're fairly new. And honestly, I don't know why some of these ended up getting in the system, but they did. So real quickly, W stands for a layer of water. Now, this is not just a wet soil horizon. But it would be, the only example I know of is something like a floating bog. Any of you ever seen a floating bog where you're out in a pond? Okay, and then, so you got the water, and you might have this mat of organic material that floats there on top. Well, if you were looking at a soil profile, you'd have this old horizon material, right? And then you get down below it, you're just in plain old water, right? Well, that you could designate as a W layer. It's not soil material, it's just water, all right? And I think the only, like I said, I don't know if you'll find it anywhere else other than a situation like this. Yeah?
There's some, I don't remember what they're called, lakes that kind of creep in like that and they end up forming soil over the top of them
mm-hmm.
Through the organic matter. Is that same thing?
It could be. It sounds like it. Anything where you would have some type of soil material, probably more commonly organic or maybe some mineral material in it, but then sitting on top of a layer of water. And I suppose that one thing that the other possibility, there are something known as submerged soils, and these have gotten a lot of attention on the East Coast. They call them subaqueous soils, but the idea is that they sometimes will have water at the surface, and it might be in a tidal area, for example, where you get water, standing water there, and then it goes away. I guess if you were out there when the tide was in, you might have a W layer on top of what a mineral or organic horizons were there. So that might be the other possibility. I haven't had much experience with those. But you're not going to run into it that often. Okay, the L type of a master horizon symbol stands for limnic materials. Anybody know what limnic materials are? What's limnology?
Inland water system.
Okay, it's a study of fresh water, usually lakes, ponds, that sort of thing. And the limnic materials are either organic or mineral materials that accumulate in that type of an environment. There are a lot of possibilities. Maybe you've heard the term marl, and this is sort of a calcareous clay that comes from the, well, I guess it could be organic or inorganic, but you get something else, coprogenous earth, which is excrement from various types of organisms, diatoms. These are all materials that you'd find in that sort of an inland water environment, aquatic environment. And again, not very widespread, so they came up with a master horizon symbol for it. The only time you ever use these are with organic soils. So it's kind of a very specialized type of use. Okay, this last one then, the M, is for human manufactured materials. And not only is it human manufactured materials, it's these materials that are route restricted. And this is something that came about as a result of trying to do soil surveys in urban areas. There's a soil survey done in Washington, D.C., New York City, Atlanta, Baltimore, some of these urban areas. And they realized once you get into urban areas, boy, you don't know what you're going to find when you start digging. And can you think of some examples of human manufactured materials that would be route restricted? Okay, landfill materials, the geotextiles that they use to seal them, that would be a good example. So geotextiles, what else?
Pavement,
asphalt, concrete, you know, all of these would be things that are route restrictive. Other possibilities, maybe you have different types of plastics, I guess even rubber would be an example. It really is interesting. There was one of my colleagues that worked on the New York City soil survey. Some of the stuff that they found. And in fact, they came up with a whole new classification system for urban soils because you find all kinds of things that you're not going to find if you go out and dig in a more natural setting. So a very different type of environment. Yeah?
So with like drainage tiles, they put in fields kind of fit in there?
It could be, but I think that one of the things that you have to deal with your, it calls me an M layer, is the lateral extensiveness of it. In other words, if it's just one little drain tile, well, and right next to it there isn't one, that's probably something you would just designate as, well, there's a drain tile in there. Whereas this, my concept of an M master horizon would be something like where you've got an area with soil on it, you dig down, it turns out it was an old foundation or roadway or something where you've got this very laterally extensive type of material that's root restricted. Well, this friend that was doing the soil survey even found a couple of bodies in the process. So, now we don't have a horizon designation for that. Okay, so those are the master horizon symbols. Don't worry too much about these three, the WLM, but certainly the O, A, E, B, C, and R you should be familiar with. And I just want to maybe take the rest of the class period and show you some examples of these things. Okay, here's the first image. People recognize this as art, right? We'll have a little bit of a cultural lesson here. Does anybody know the name of this painting? It's pretty famous. I'm sure you've seen it.
American Gothic.
Yeah, it's called American Gothic. Oh, that's right. You've spent time in Iowa.
Yeah.
And who's the artist?
I actually can't think of his name right now.
Okay, well, he's Grant Wood is the guy's name. And I put this in here because everybody recognizes it, but Grant Wood, I think he might have been from, I don't know if he was from Iowa, but he's from the Midwest. He did a lot of these rural agricultural scenes in Iowa and thereabouts. And here's one that he did that is less famous, but one that I really like because look at the attention to detail there. There's a road cut, looks like a nice A horizon, B horizon, C horizon in there. So I think that's one of the points about these master horizons or soil horizons in general is that they're fairly obvious, and it's something that you don't have to be a soil scientist to notice when you look at a soil, that there are these very distinct layers. And we're going to be talking a lot about not only how you designate these layers, but how they form and some of the conditions that promote the development of them. Has anybody ever seen this painting? Well, if you get some of these state quarters, if you ever find the one for Iowa, you'll notice the back of it looks like this, and it's the same scene. What really irritates me, though, is that, well, you can see what they cut out of that. But other than that, it's probably the most common place where you're going to see that image. And if you look at a lot of the European art from back in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, you'll find a lot of the rural scenes done there. Many of them will show soil profiles, and there'll be some indication of different horizons or layers there. So they are obvious. Okay, some examples of what we talked about. If you went out and looked at one of our coniferous forest floors around here, it's going to look something like this. What would be the horizon designation? Yeah, this would be an O horizon of some kind. Here's a little bit different forest floor. This is more of a broadleaf type of an environment, but same thing. You got a lot of leaf material. This is looking down on it.
Okay,
sorry. Yeah, you're looking down on it, so plan view. And you'll notice these leaves are in different stages of decomposition. Some are fairly fresh, and some in places are pretty highly decomposed. But anyhow, this would be also designated as an O horizon. It would represent a forest floor or litter layer. This is a wetland soil from up in northern Idaho, and it's hard to tell in the picture, but this is all organic material, okay? It's the fairly highly this would be what we might call a peatland, all right? So very light material. You cut out a volume of this thing, it's easy to lift up. This stuff often floats, so it's much lighter than mineral soil material. Okay, now those are the organic horizons. We get into mineral horizons, and I mentioned an A horizon. You said it's mineral horizon, and here's an example. They typically have a lot of roots. A horizons typically will have granular structure, and probably the most noticeable feature is that they are dark. And that's because of the accumulation of organic matter. In this example right here, maybe you've got, let's call it 5% thereabouts, but not an organic horizon, a mineral horizon. Here's a good example of a typical grassland type soil, and you notice the upper part of that, it's almost black, very, very dark color, and that's, again, an example of an A horizon, maybe 7 or 8% organic matter. So not an organic soil horizon, but the type of organic matter that comes from the annual proliferation of roots. The roots die back, they are decomposed, they're already there in the soil. So as they're converted into humus, you get this very thick, dark layer, and that's very typical of grassland soils. And under an A horizon, you might find, here's an example of a B horizon of some kind. Maybe there's some soil structure in there, and then a C horizon down at the bottom. A little more difficult to see. Now here's more of a typical soil profile from a forest. And it's hard to see up top, but you notice that I put the designations on here. There would be a litter layer there, forest floor. There is an A horizon. You can't see the scale here, but here's 1 foot, here's 2 feet. So you're looking at about a 3 foot exposure. What's the difference between the A horizon in this soil versus the one you saw in the previous picture? Yeah, this is pretty light colored. It's not that well developed, and that's very typical of forest soils, is that A horizons are much more weakly expressed. And we'll talk about the reasons for that. But in a forest environment, you start getting into more precipitation. And here, you notice this lighter layer underneath the A horizon. Well, that's an example of what you probably would designate as an E horizon. So things are being moved out of here, and they're accumulating down here in the B horizon. I think you can see how, in terms of the chroma, the reddish colors in here, it's going to be higher in this B horizon. And there's probably clays accumulated there. I'm just guessing. Those are not necessarily things that you can pick out from looking at the profile. But if something's moving out of that E layer, it's got to be accumulating somewhere. And it's typically in the B horizon right below it. I don't know that I've ever seen a soil that has an E horizon without having a B horizon of some kind below it. I can't think of where you would ever run into that situation. Here is the state soil of Florida, and this, you can see the shovel for scale there, but great example of an A horizon up there at the top, and then a very, very thick E horizon. So there's been a lot of eluviation there, or leaching, and down here is the B horizon where it's all accumulating, and I guess if you dig down far enough, you'll actually get into something you can designate as a C horizon. Okay, I think I better stop there, and we'll take a couple minutes and finish this up on Thursday. So what I want you to do on this assignment is, I've taken all of these subordinate distinctions, and I've tried to organize them a little bit. It might help you keep track of them. The first section is called accumulation, and then special morphological features, special properties, and then finally organic materials. And then the last on the back side, these limnic materials. So look these things up, and you don't need to worry so much about all. You'll find a lot of these, they might talk about, it might be a lengthy description, but just so you kind of know, when you see a K, what does that mean? What's that stand for? Because what happens is we use these subordinate distinctions to supplement the information that we're providing using the master horizon symbol. So instead of just saying it's a B horizon, we might call it a BK horizon or a BKQM horizon and indicate a lot more about the characteristics. Okay, and then we'll go through these in class on Thursday. So be prepared if I happen to call on you, for example, that you be able to tell me what an N subordinate distinction is. Okay? And in lab, I think we'll do it the same way as last week. Have one group come about 1:30, and then maybe put the second group 2:30, 2:45, somewhere in there, just to stagger everybody. All right?